Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. Joining us by phone is state government reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jesse Balmert. Welcome back, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
And in the studio, reporter for Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Joe Ingles. Welcome back, Joe.
Great to be here.
And the bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, Karen Kessler. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
Last week, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments over a case involving a Wisconsin map drawn by Republicans and considered the key to the GOP gaining control of the state house there in 2012. Even though Republicans lost the popular vote statewide, the decision in this case will affect other states, including Ohio. Joe Ingles, why?
Well, because that map is what happened with that map is very similar to what happened in Ohio. If you look at the Ohio maps, we have that snake along the lake, I guess it's called, up where, Marcy Kaptur's area, that area.
I called it the beachfront district as well.
The beachfront district.
But I know snake along the lake is pivotal.
Yeah. But we have a lot of districts in our map that you sit there and you go, wait a minute, that's kind of weird, and the Wisconsin map is like that too. It has some of those questionable districts. And so the thinking is that whatever comes out of that decision at the Supreme Court level, that will have some bearing on Ohio. But we've got, other things going on here, too, as far as there's, some legislators who are now, forming a panel to look at redistricting. And there's, of course, these good government groups, so-called good government groups that are out there collecting signatures to put something on the ballot next year. And that's what actually kind of forced the legislators to go in and try to come up with something. So there are a couple of redistricting options out there, regardless of what happens with this court.
Karen Kessler, gerrymandering is as old as the Republic, as they say. Why now? Why is this coming to the fore now?
Well, I think we're dealing with the situation that the census is coming in 2020, and there's been some efforts in different levels to try to change the way that the districts are drawn. The whole idea of politicians choosing their voters, the voters choose the politicians, then the politicians choose their voters. That's been troubling to some people. And you have people who are outspoken about this, like Governor Kasich. Interestingly enough, he signed the current map with the snake on the lake there.
Right.
And he said he was going to put something about gerrymandering into the budget that just passed over the summer. Did not do that. Mm-hmm. But now he's out there speaking out, saying that something needs to be done about gerrymandering, which helps lead to what Joe just mentioned about this task force of state lawmakers who are trying to come up with a new way to draw those maps. But that threat of a ballot issue coming up next year is a big deal to them, because obviously if indeed a ballot issue does get out there and passes, then lawmakers would then lose the ability to control what the process would be.
In the case of this ballot issue, it does take the control away from lawmakers to draw congressional districts. And,
And that's actually something that when I talked to Matt Huffman, who's one of the four members of this commission, he said that he's very clear. They want to keep that authority with state lawmakers. They believe that that's part of where it belongs, that it doesn't belong in the hands of a commission, because the ballot issue would put the authority into a commission that is
A
bipartisan commission that's already drawing the state lawmakers, state house and state senate districts. It would just add congressional districts onto their duties. And Matt Huffman and others believe that authority lies with state lawmakers and not with some other outside group.
Huh.
Well, and I also think, to the point of why is this such an issue now, I think there is a lot of frustration about people going very far to the left and very far to the right, which, like you said, that frustration has always been there. But we saw a very divided country after this last presidential election. And some of that is because people just have to go. The primaries are the races that are really competitive right now. And so you have to appeal to the far left or the far right in your district. And that doesn't necessarily make a Congress that's super willing to compromise.
And that's a really important point here, is that the average margin of victory for Ohio's 18 members of Congress, I mean, it was in the double digits for Democratic
districts. In the general election.
Right. For Democratic districts as well as Republican districts. So there's 12 Republican districts and there's four Democratic districts. And those candidates who won by huge margins. So if you win the primary, you're going to win the general election. And primaries are known to take people and candidates further out to the extreme. So that's a really important point.
It also weakens the party that's not in power in those areas, because a lot of times you'll see in a heavily Republican area, you'll see a Democratic candidate actually coming in and posing as a Republican. Now, here's the thing. When that happens, guess what happens locally? The local parties step up and put all their muscle, money, power into getting that party nominee elected. So it makes it even more party driven than it would have been.
And it also does bring threats down on existing members of Congress that if you do this, you're going to get primaried. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that does tend to make it more difficult for members of Congress to bargain with other members of Congress across the aisle. Because if you fear you're going to lose that primary, which means you're going to lose the general, then what's the incentive to go and work with somebody across the aisle?
And that explains in large part people, how did we get so polarized in Congress and how did we get so polarized in the Ohio General Assembly? That's the equation right there.
Right, exactly.
You know, Jesse Balmert, as far as the groups, the good government, so-called good government groups that want to get this on the ballot in 2018, they say they're going forward with this.
Yes, they are. They're still collecting signatures and making sure that they have the right number and that they're correct and so forth. And I think we've seen recently in Ohio that outside group pressure has forced Ohio legislature to move. And I think that I don't think we would potentially have a medical marijuana program that's being ramped up now if we didn't have outside groups that were pushing for legalization of medical marijuana.
On the ballot. They were pushing for it on the ballot, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And so I think these groups, you know, are going forward because they've also seen the legislature talk about this before and then not act.
They got pretty close at one point.
The promise that they are going to do it this time is perhaps not something they can take to the bank.
Jesse's absolutely right. When I talked to Catherine Turser, who's one of the people involved in this and has been involved, she's brought several ballot issues on redistricting to voters, and they've all failed to this point, other than the last one, which was actually a plan that was developed by state lawmakers and then got the support of groups like Common Cause Ohio and the League of Women Voters. But the fear that if we don't do anything, nothing will happen, and then here we'll be at the 2020 census before we know it, and the map will be redrawn like it is now. And if you recall back when the map was being drawn, not only was there this weirdo district that Joe was referring to, but there were all these stories about hotel rooms, smoky hotel rooms where Speaker John Boehner was involved. And you know, there was the threat of two primaries because we didn't know where the congressional districts were going to be and all these things. So I think the state lawmakers really want to avoid that kind of potential confusion and chaos by getting something done now. But these citizens groups say, hey, we're going to go forward with our plan anyway because we don't trust that they're going to get something together in that right time frame.
Tom?
And we really are.
Go ahead,
we are,
Jesse.
Really coming up on the deadline just because we're getting very close to the elections that would decide who would be in control of the pen. And so we need this kind of, we're getting very close to when this could not happen at all.
Tom, you're on the air. Welcome. Hello, Tom.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I have a comment about the issue that they're talking about on TV right now, gun rights.
We're actually talking about redistricting right now.
Oh, okay.
All right. Sorry about that. We'll get our screener back on and clarify that. If lawmakers do get something together, are they talking about putting something on the ballot themselves, this commission? Is that what would happen? Is it have to be?
It would have to go.
Because it's a constitutional question. So it has to go before all the voters. And what would take precedence? Would it be would the legislative ballot initiative take precedence over the
if they both
they wouldn't be on the ballot at the same time.
Exactly.
My understanding is that the legislators are trying to get their ballot issue on for the primary in May, and then the citizens groups are looking at November. That's a really good question. And as you recall, we've had these issues before where you've had these potentially competing ballot issues, and it always seems like one drops out. I can imagine that, and I certainly don't want to speak for anybody, but the citizens groups have been supportive of legislative efforts in the past. And I think their whole issue is they want to get something done before the 2020 census, so there could be a chance of making a change in how the maps are drawn. But you'd have to ask them specifically, and I think they would probably say it depends on what the proposal looks like. Is it really going to potentially create more districts that are competitive and give voters more of a say in the process? And you know, I think they would want to see the specifics, as anybody would.
Yeah, because you could have, you know, the lawmakers could come up with a plan. They want to retain control in this process. They could come up with a plan that just takes what they have and scales it down to a smaller. And that will not be something that the League of Women Voters and Common Cause Ohio, these groups that are circulating this petition, they will not buy into that.
They want bipartisan buy-in in general. They want.
They think the problem. Then again, the core of the problem is that lawmakers control the process.
Right. You don't have to get the minority party to participate. If you can just override
the
minority.
Where's the watchdog then?
And I think that's been the desire all along. Is certainly the majority party is going to draw the lines, but the minority party should at least there should be input. And so that's why this bipartisan commission, two Republicans and two Democrats, is very interesting to watch, because, you know, the two Democrats on this panel obviously are going to have some issues that they want brought up.
And as far as the role of computerization in all of this, there are a lot of people say they could put forward balanced districts.
They could, absolutely.
It's not, it's is just it, writing
there
the right.
There have been contests that have been done that have shown this. But there are a group of lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats, an overwhelming group, who believe that they should draw the lines, that they're elected to draw the lines, not a computer.
And then I want to go back to before. This is when Governor Strickland was in office. There was a proposal. It got through the General Assembly. What happened to that? It was at the finish line almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was, I'm trying
that
to...
That would have created balance in the process.
There was a lot of opposition to that, and I'm trying to remember...
Well, there was also the issue, if you're talking about the one I think you're talking about...
Speaker Houston...
Right, but there was also the issue that the 2010 elections were coming up.
Right.
And a lot of people thought that the Democrats could... I mean, right then, the Democrats controlled the governor's office and controlled the House in the state house, and there was some thought that, hey, we could win more. So this is the kind of thing
it's
that happens all the time, and that's why this is a really good time, a lot of folks say, to do this, is because nobody knows who's going to win the 2020 elections. Nobody knows who's going to be in charge then.
And Jesse Balmer, what difference does it make what the U.S. Supreme Court is doing right now? I mean, if they rule against the system in Wisconsin, then that changes it for everybody anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have some pretty wide-ranging effects across the nation, and including in Ohio. And I know lawmakers have used pending Supreme Court decisions in the past to say, oh, let's wait for the Supreme Court before we actually do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for these particular efforts, that's also something you would have to look out for. This could be one reason to delay.
There was a question down in Arizona, I think, over whether it would be constitutional for a state to change how it draws congressional lines. And the court found in favor of, no, the states have the right to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That whole issue of what, I mean, I'm like Ohio passed federal term limits many years ago.
Right.
That was overruled because of the concerns about, you know, certain states passing term limits and certain states not. But yeah, states have the right to draw their own congressional district lines. And that's why state lawmakers are on this panel saying we want to keep the control of that within state legislators' control because we're the ones elected to do it. That's the prevailing theory.
And there is a sentiment on both sides that elections have consequences, and the people that you elected here, you know, to the victors go the spoils, per se. And, if you're the party in control, you should be able to draw the lines in a way that's favorable to you.
Except that now that computers can do it, they can be so gerrymandered, if that's a verb, that it's ridiculous, according to critics. So we will continue our conversation. You're listening to our weekly reporters roundtable on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Tomorrow is the last day to register to vote in the November general election. The big ballot question this year is Issue 2, and it's shaping up to be one of the most expensive advertising campaigns in Ohio history. Supporters of the Ohio Drug Price Relief Act are running ads promising the lowest known prices on prescription drugs and a $400 million tax cut. But taxes specifically are not part of the original ballot measure. So still with us to talk about that for our weekly reporter roundtable, by phone, state government reporter at the Cincinnati Enquirer, Jesse Balmert, and in the studio, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Joe Ingles, and bureau chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Karen Kassler. All right. So issue two, lots of promises being made. Who's behind issue two? What it's an outsider from California,
right? And he has put this idea out there. This is something that comes from a foundation that works with AIDS patients and trying to afford different drugs that they need. And this foundation is trying to get this out there. And basically, what the idea behind it is, it would allow the amount that the Veterans Administration pays for drugs, that would be extended, if this passed, that would be extended to, Ohio programs.
Medicare, Medicaid, that kind of a thing.
Right. And, you know, then there's a lot of people who are insured by a private insurer. Mm-hmm. So the question is, does this affect them? Well, it doesn't. In law, it wouldn't in law. But theoretically, if you've got all these other places discounting the drugs, guess what those private insurers are going to do? They're probably going to want to have better deals on their drugs, too, right? Mm-hmm. So on the other side of it, you've got Big Pharma. And they've put up a foundation.
And never has Big Pharma been bigger.
Never has Big Pharma been bigger.
This.
It's big bucks.
Yeah.
So they've been mounting the anti-campaign. And there's a lot of stuff. These campaigns, if you listen to the ads, they're confusing. They are very confusing. And on both sides. You mentioned the taxes. That's not in issue two. There's no mention of the taxes.
There's no tax cut.
Yeah, that's not. And there's not even the mention of the $400 million that, you know, that's not an issue too either.
But the calculus is that if the state benefits by getting these cheaper rates on drugs, it would save, quote-unquote, taxpayers $400 million a year. But this is not in law. There's
when
no promises.
When has that ever worked in government? Yeah. Come on.
Right.
I mean,
but furthermore, the opponents make one salient argument that I want you guys to tell me about. They say that the state already is getting a good deal on their Medicaid and Medicare drug plans.
Right. They say that there are already discounts that are in place that we might not necessarily know about those things. And so if you do indeed put into law that this is going to be the new discount that is going to have to be provided, then all those deals that exist right now on drugs would go away. And so the state could potentially not save any money at all, save even less money than the state is saving. And, you know, but this is also part of the whole confusion around, I mean, even you look at your own statements, if you have insurance, on how much you're paying for anything. And it's very, very difficult to get a real sense of, of what things cost and how much you could save going from one to the other. And I think that that's part of the confusion that's happening here. And then to add in this whole, well, it could cut taxes by $400 million. I mean, that's a reference to opponents are teaming up with State Senator Michael Skindle from Northeast Ohio, who had proposed a bill that would require that if the state, if issue two does pass and the state does end up saving money, that money would actually go to used to do a
slush fund.
Exactly. And so that's. But it really does further confuse the issue potentially, which they say is already confused because they say the drug companies have spent $30 million trying to confuse us over the last couple of months.
And they, you know, we ain't seen nothing yet probably when it comes to how much money they're spending.
We still got what, a month and a half before? A month? No, less than a month now. We're less than a month before the election. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to these ads and everything. But obviously Ohio is seen as a really big state here. This is only their second effort to try to do this. They tried to pass it in California and it failed. But they're hoping that if it passes in Ohio, they can take it to other states. But it's really important to note that there is nothing in the law that would say that there would be this kind of trickle-down effect.
There's no guarantees.
There's no guarantees. And you know, what this would do would only direct certain drugs in certain programs, which taxpayers do pay for. But the idea of it reducing the cost that you pay for your EpiPen, well, I think that's really debatable.
And part of the challenge is, it would be great if I could go to the VA and say, oh, how much are you paying for an EpiPen? And then go to Medicaid and say, oh, how much are you paying for an EpiPen? And then I, as a reporter or just a voter, could look at those two prices and compare them. But because a lot of these negotiations are confidential, it's hard for us to say, I mean, I don't have the price for either of those things in front of me. And so that's where you get these projections of how much they would save, but that's kind of what they are, projections based off of how much they think both parties are negotiating these prices down.
And I think, you know, on the anti-issue two side, I mean, you know, there's obviously a lot of anger toward the drug companies for the cost of EpiPens, for the CEO's salaries, for, you know, these reports of drugs being bought up and then the cost being inflated and all these kind of things. You know, that I think is a lot of the driver behind the people who are interested in passing issue two, thinking it would do something. Wouldn't it put a check on these drug companies? But there's no guarantee that it would.
And, you know, I've been seeing a lot of people who are really confused because they'll say, well, you know, I just don't like these big drug companies and I don't like everything they stand for. So I'm going to vote no. Well, that's exactly what the big companies want you to do. But, you know, the thing is, when voters are confused, they vote no.
Or they don't vote at all.
Or they don't vote at all. So, I mean, right there, if you're on the no side of an issue, you already have a little bit of an advantage. And these drug companies, you know, these ads that are coming out on their side and the ads that are coming out on the other side are just raising a lot of questions and confusing a lot of people.
It is a heavy lift for issue two to pass.
Is there any polling out there?
I haven't seen any lately. But I mean, the very fact that you've got to get over all the no voters and all the people who don't want to vote, and there's only one other statewide issue on the ballot, which is issue one, the crime victims amendment. You know, this is a really heavy lift for the people who are trying to get issue two passed. And I think they were hoping to have it on the ballot sooner than this. And so this is you know, it failed pretty substantially in California. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that was related to, there was a lot of ads. You know, the issue, the anti-issue two people will tell you, hey, all the editorials were against it. And that's what's happening here in Ohio. But certainly there's a lot of money involved.
And the people that they've drawn in, the issue two, the anti-issue two folks, the drug companies, they've put every sector, basically, Republicans, Democrats, veterans, people who are older, children, you name it, they represent someone that of some sector of life, and they're all on that side. And they got in there really early and got people who were former Medicaid directors who have dealt with the system. And
they have some elite people running the campaigns as well.
And it's very, very interesting when you consider that Matt Borges, the former head of the Ohio Republican Party, is out there making a populist argument for issue two.
Right.
And Dale Butlin, a longtime Democratic strategist who was the chief of staff for John Glenn when he was a senator, is out there arguing alongside not just the medical professionals, but the drug companies.
Right.
It's really, you know,
strange
we see these
bedfellows.
On these issues where you have these strange bedfellows, people who are aligned, who don't normally seem like they would be aligned. And that's kind of what's happening here, too. And it's interesting for political watchers like to look at this.
And I do think the simplest argument that the issue two proponents are making that, you know, can resonate with people is, you know, pharma and drug companies are spending an awful lot of money against this. And, you know, would they be doing this if it would not affect them in any way?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. If it didn't matter, why are they spending millions? On the other hand, it's worthy to note that they have millions.
Well, but they also have a serious image problem. I mean, the state of Ohio is currently suing five drug manufacturers.
Right.
You know, so and like I was saying earlier, people are angry over the cost of drugs and angry over the CEO salaries and this sort of thing. So they do have an image problem here. And I think they're well aware of how frustrated people are with their costs and what they're getting.
You know, there was a forum last night with the Republican candidates in the GOP primary for governor. And I'm wondering, did that issue come up? Did any is this going to.
My power went out, so I didn't hear it. I started to listen, but my power went out last night, so I didn't get to hear it. So I recorded it. I'd love to have an answer for you on that, but I didn't get to hear it.
Jesse, any news on that?
I unfortunately am not aware either.
Okay.
I do know one thing that did come up last night. I did get power back briefly to hear at least Mary Taylor talking about and of course, she's the lieutenant governor, and she was asked specifically about the opioid situation in Ohio and the crisis that's happening. She's in a unique position in that two of her children are in recovery or have been dealing with opioid addiction. And she did say that, you know, the government does play a role in this, but that there's a far greater role potentially to be played by, you know, churches and community groups and others involved to really help addicts come out of this. So, you know, that's kind of a tangentially related thing to what you were asking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching the tribe, I'll admit it.
When I got power back on, that's kind of what I would turn to as well. So.
An email from John says, regarding the cost-shifting argument of the opponents, do drug companies charge different prices in different states? If not, then why do the nurses and doctors and other associations say that Ohioans will bear the cost to make up for the savings being required by the issue? Wouldn't that cost, say it exists, be spread out to all the states, Ohio being only 11 million out of 330 million people? Sounds like somebody who knows what they're talking about.
I think I got lost somewhere in that question there.
The cost shifting, though, isn't the cost shifting really? It's a national cost to the drug companies. Why do they say that what they charge the state would affect the rest of us whose prescriptions aren't paid for by the state?
Well, and that speaks to the transparency issue. We don't know the answer to that. And that
we
really
don't know
is
how
very frustrating.
They make their figure. We don't know how they do their books.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the argument is if they are losing money on these public insurance, so Medicaid and so forth, they would, you know, have to raise their rates on other customers, and potentially that would be spread out to other states other than Ohio. But, you know, how many hypotheticals I just placed in front of you right there, so it is hard to tell.
Right.
Let's talk we have a few minutes before the break, about issue one. What is the crime victims protection proposal? You brought it up, Karen Kessler.
It's basically would take the various crime victims' rights that are scattered throughout Ohio law and put them in a constitutional amendment. The idea being, according to its proponents, that crime victims need more protection, that they often don't know their rights. They often aren't informed of the rights that they are entitled to. And so putting them in the Constitution, elevating them to a constitutional level, would give crime victims more protection. And you have Attorney General Mike DeWine co-chairing the campaign, so obviously believing that a constitutional amendment is a good idea for this. But on the other side, you have the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association, not all prosecutors, but the association itself, mm-hmm. the Ohio Public Defender, and some others who are saying that this just really won't do much to truly protect victims' rights because there's no money for enforcement. There's no real teeth behind it, and they're concerned about elevating victims' rights to the point where they are at the same par with defendants' rights, and that cases could get thrown out. The proponents of Issue 1 say that that's ridiculous, but.
Yeah, and if you look at the poster children that the Issue 1 campaign has put out there so far, the people who have, when I say poster children, the people who have actually been affected by not getting these rights in certain cases, mm-hmm. Most of them come from the smaller rural communities. And what is apparent from what they're saying is that, you know, some counties may be applying things differently than other counties, and that's what we know. So this is meant to even that playing field. But as Karen said, if there's no enforcement, you know, that raises another question there.
And to me, it's really interesting to see the Prosecuting Attorneys Association and the Public Defender on the same side. But, you know, there are individual prosecutors such as Franklin County's Ron O'Brien who've come out in favor of this, saying that he's seen too many cases where victims' rights were not protected as well as they could have been. And so he wants to see this pass. So this is, I think, There's a general favorability toward this issue that does not exist for Issue 2. But certainly there are groups that are saying it's not a slam dunk. It does raise some questions.
If it were passed and it did take on the, you know, the level of importance by virtue of being in the Constitution, would that require the Ohio General Assembly to fund these things then? I mean, would there be
school
a mandate?
Funding has been ruled unconstitutional 4 times.
And
so,
yeah,
you tell me.
They've had a jolly good time getting funding for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotcha. They don't have to do anything they don't want to do.
Mm-mm.
Doesn't matter.
Well, and also the challenge is one of the items allows if a victim feels like these rights aren't being upheld, they could appeal the decision. And, you know, presumably you would need an attorney to do that and who would pay for that attorney and so forth. I think those are some of the concerns from the prosecutors and defense associations. But, you know, on its face, more rights for the victims of crime, it's hard to say that's a bad thing that voters would be against, actually. Mm-hmm.
And Jesse's right. I think prosecutors are concerned about just general delays and just that the system is already slow enough in some areas because of continual court actions and that sort of thing, and to potentially slow the system down more, that would be a problem. But, you know, the proponents say that's not what this is about. This is about really giving victims a voice so that victims, when they were attacked or their family members were attacked or that they have a recourse, that they have somebody on their side, so to speak.
Real quick, Brian in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hi there. So my concern anytime that we make any adjustment to the Constitution is that we should be doing it as little as possible. And I don't know that much about the history of this bill per se, this Constitution amendment, but I don't remember this ever making headway in the legislature. So my first question is, why hasn't it been taken up in the State House? Why do we need to make an amendment to the Constitution when this could be done through revised code? And I'll take my comments from your guests off the air. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got Republicans are big backers of this thing, and they certainly control the entire State House.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, this is coming, first of all, this is not coming from Ohio. It didn't start in Ohio. This has been going on. There's a gentleman that started this whole campaign nationally, and he lost his sister. And the problem was that just they didn't even realize it, that the guy who was accused of killing the sister had been let out on parole. And they went out in public. They saw this guy. It really threw him for a loop. And he's done research and he's realized that this is going on in other places. So this is coming from a national place to begin with. But it does apply in Ohio because they are finding people in Ohio who are telling stories about how they've had similar situations. One that comes to mind is a woman who testified about it, and she said that she, her and her children were run off the road by her ex-husband, now ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, he tried to kill them. They, you know, there were assault charges, all that, you know, the charges were filed on him for that incident. But then she went through a divorce. And she said she was, while she was going through that divorce, the criminal charges were delayed and were put on hold. And then by the time that that divorce was finally settled, then the judge said, oh, wait, it's been too much time. We can't go prosecute this now. So they dropped the criminal case. That's just one example of someone who's come forward who said, you know, this does affect, you know, me and it affects my situation. It would have helped me. So there are cases,
also,
even though it's nationally, there are cases here that are affected. Jesse?
But also to the caller's point, a lot of these rights are in Ohio law already, like the right to be notified when somebody
right.
is out on bail or so forth. And so that's one argument that we don't need these because they're already in state law. The pro argument is by putting it in the Constitution, you're elevating its importance and, you know, potentially it's something that these smaller county prosecutors would pay more attention to.
And the example that Joe just talked about, that's the one that Ron O'Brien mentioned to me as one of the reasons why he had gotten involved and is supportive of this. Marcy's Law is passed, I think, in 6 states. It's pending in 9. So we're not the first. And Ron O'Brien was also telling me he's talked to prosecutors in California where the law has been in place for about 10 years, and it hasn't significantly slowed anything down or caused any major problems. So that's another reason why he says he's on board. But again, it's these unintended consequences. And like the caller was saying, there's been a real concern over the years with all the constitutional amendments that have passed and the repercussions of those things, why not go through the legislature first? And that's a different path to take to get anything in before voters. But, you know, this is one that this is the route that they chose. And like Jesse just said, that, you know, a lot of these rights are already in state law. It's just kind of moving them to the constitutional level.
Jesse Bulmer, we need to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jesse Bulmer, state government reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Reporters Roundtable will continue, one short but nevertheless mighty. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It is our weekly Reporters Roundtable. We must now turn our sights with my guests, Joe Ingles and Karen Kassler of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, to the issue of guns. The big effort is to ban the bump stocks. That's a device the Las Vegas gunman used, apparently, to kill 58 people at that concert venue. It's now hitting resistance from gun rights groups. It was thought that the NRA was going to go with this one, but now they're pulling out the slippery slope argument. You know, any chance that something like this could pass in Ohio?
Well, one thing, we touched briefly on this GOP Governor's Candidates Forum last night that happened, and it wasn't a debate. It was a sit down with each of the candidates. Mm-hmm. And Mary Taylor was the only one who weighed in on that at all. And she had said that she would not ban those bump stocks.
Did she say why?
She said, and this is the argument that I think we've heard a lot on this, is that the problem was the individual. The problem was the person who was behind this, and that, you know, and we've been hearing a lot about that, that we need no more investigation. There's a million conspiracy theories and that sort of thing out there. But, you know, people who would like to see certain measures taken on gun control say, if not now, when? I mean, for crying out loud.
If not bump stocks, what?
Right. And if not people being, you know, essentially mowed down across a field or across a street from, you know, where the shooter was. I mean, what else can we do? But then the other side says, well, there's nothing that could have necessarily been done that would have definitely prevented that. So it just brings back a lot of these arguments that we've heard after Sandy Hook and after Orlando and some of these other major shootings that, you know, this is a very, very difficult topic to talk about and to really come up with answers that could potentially get through Congress. I mean, there's nothing that I can think of that could potentially get through at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing I think is, when this first happened, there was a lot of shock and a lot of frustration. And I think that the NRA was kind of, when they made that first statement about the bump stocks, they were probably realizing all that shock and frustration. But the problem exists that, you know, we keep having these incidents happen over and over and over. And people are frustrated. And, you know, they want to see some action somewhere. And I don't think there's like a cry for, I never heard of bump stocks before this whole thing happened.
I had, but...
But, you know, it wasn't something that was, like, out there, you know?
Right.
I think the fact is that people just want to see something done. And the problem is that this is much greater than just guns and ammo. This is mental health. You know, you've got the mental health piece of it. You've got the piece of our culture being too violent. You've got the part of this isolationism that was at play. There's so many different parts of this. And, you know, to talk about just the guns is kind of not doing it justice when there's so many things that are going on here.
But the other half are folks who are saying, well, what else is it going to take? What's it going to take to make some changes? I mean, good grief, kids, people who were at a nightclub, now people who are at a music concert. What else is it going to take for us to potentially make any changes?
Have there been any proposals floated to restrict other rights? Because that often happens when there's been an attack like this. Take all the rights that were taken away or the restrictions that were put in place just at the airports.
Well, I think that that's one of the things that's been talked about is, you know, people who are on the terrorist no-fly list, should they be allowed to purchase weapons? But you know, I don't think this gentleman was. So, you know, that's the other side of that argument is, well, how would that have prevented this? And it's kind of interesting to talk about preventing something that's already happened. I mean, in a way, what's the point of that? Mm-hmm. But it just... There's a lot at play here, and it's federal more than I think state at this point. You know, because we obviously have several laws here in the state that we're talking, or bills that we're talking about that would deal with concealed carry and other things like that. But this is kind of on a different level.
And actually, all the state bills that are getting consideration, or at least serious consideration right now, those bills would actually grant more rights to gun owners. So,
and they've been in discussion for a while. There's nothing that came out in the wake of Las Vegas that's currently
new.
Close to getting underway here in Ohio.
And you said that Mary Taylor was the only one who weighed in on this at the forum last night.
Yes, that's my understanding. I need to go back and listen to the whole thing, but yes, I believe she was the only one that weighed in. But I've certainly, you know, as we kind of touched on this earlier, the whole idea of the primary and being very deliberately partisan, because obviously it's a partisan primary. You know, the four people who are running for governor, Mary Taylor, the lieutenant governor, Secretary of State John Husted, Attorney General Mike DeWine, and Congressman Jim Renacci, they've all been very strong conservative on in their campaigns and their ads and that sort of thing, that, you know, Second Amendment and the real staunch conservative issues they've been pretty upfront about.
Is it going to be something that will be necessarily an issue in the gubernatorial election coming up in, You know, no.
You know, here's the thing, Anne. We hear a lot, right after something like this happens, we hear a lot of people say, oh, this is so important. We need to pass gun laws. We need to do this.
You also hear people saying it's too soon to talk about
right.
it.
That's you hear that, too. But what it comes down to is, you know, the closer you get to an election, people don't necessarily put their vote on one issue. Okay, and it comes down to, and you can see this with polling, almost always it comes down to how do you feel about the candidate? Do you trust them? Are they someone you'd want to have the beer with or whatever? You know, they look at these personal things. They look at the 30-second ads that define the issues for them. You know, voters look at a lot of different things to make a decision, and rarely is one issue the thing that sways them over a line for someone or against someone.
I think, though, Donald Trump is going to be a huge player in this election in terms of not only potential influence, because obviously the four Republican candidates for governor have talked more about Trump and seem more aligned with him than they do with Kasich, Governor Kasich, the
right.
current Republican governor, who has publicly feuded with Trump, who has never supported Trump, who has never endorsed him. And there are people in the Republican Party who are very irritated about that. So I think that Donald Trump is going to be a big player on that side, as well as on the Democratic side. You can bet that whoever emerges from right now, the four Democrats who are running for governor, whoever emerges from that field, and there could be more, is obviously going to bring Donald Trump into this election next year.
Exactly. I totally agree on that.
And I should also mention that there has been one thing that came out of the Las Vegas massacre that has happened at the State House. Senator Cecil Thomas, who's a Democrat from Cincinnati, did propose a bill to ban bump stocks. I should also note that the Senate Democrats are a very, very, very small group.
It seems
unlikely that that bill would have any traction.
Right. Sharon in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning. It seems to me that it's ridiculous that we still have the Dickey Amendment in place. There is no other major cause
tell,
of death.
Tell, Sharon, tell
in
us
the
what
United
the Dickey
States.
Amendment does.
The Dickey Amendment forbids the CDC from studying gun violence.
Right.
If they are forbidden from studying diabetes, if they were forbidden from studying heart disease, we would not be saving lives.
Yeah,
they are forbidden.
Yeah, I mean, what about something like, of course, that's at the federal level, Sharon, thanks a lot for that call. What about something like that? Just gaining knowledge.
Well, you know,
we study seatbelts, we study bus safety.
Right, right. And there's something to be said about that. But I have noticed, like, even when there's a shooting, especially when a kid gets hold of a parent's gun, I'm always thinking, well, where did they get that gun? How'd they get that gun? And you never get those answers, it seems, in the news stories later. You never figure out where they got it, how they got it, very rarely, I should say.
I know that when you hear conservative voices on this issue, quite often there's a mention of in Obamacare, there was at least some discussion about doctors asking, pediatricians asking about guns in the home. And a lot of conservatives felt that that was inappropriate. They had a problem with that. And so, you know, I think there's been some efforts to try to move this forward by groups who want to see something happen on it. There are think tanks and groups that do some, I think, peripheral study. But yeah, I mean, it would be very interesting to note, you know, what those numbers really are if we had an actual figure on that.
Well, you know, but some segments of our society might not want to know those numbers, actually. So
Governor Kasich said that he supports a ban on the bump stocks. And I was going to ask a quick question. We only have a couple of minutes left, but does he even matter anymore?
Not really, because the lawmakers are the ones who have to pass that. He can't just go out and do it. And right now, as Karen says,
he's as lame as a lame duck can get it in Ohio.
Yeah, as Karen says, you know, it's all about Trump right now. It's not about Kasich.
Right.
And I'm just not sure. I mean, again, with the four candidates for governor kind of pushing away from him. And
everyone but DeWine pretty much threw him under the bus last night.
And, you know, I don't know that, you know, he vetoed 47 items in the state budget. And six of those vetoes have been overridden. More could potentially be overridden.
More
I don't,
most ever.
Yeah, that was the most ever budget vetoes. But and more could be coming again. So, you know, I'm just not sure that if Kasich wants something, that the legislature will help make it happen.
Mm-hmm. There's been talk, again, we're running out of time, but just talk about him going independent next time by 2020.
I think he's made references in the past to how disappointed he is in the way that the Republican Party is going. And you know, but he's also told me and other people that, you know, the idea of a well-funded independent could do well, but who's a well-funded independent at this point? And you know, you'd have to get a Michael Bloomberg or somebody like that to really bring some real money into it.
I want to thank you guys both for joining us, Joe Engels and Karen Kassler of the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks to you both. Appreciate your time as always.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody else for listening to our weekly Reporters Roundtable. You've been listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.